Welcome to the Newsbusters podcast with the executive editor of Newsbusters, your host, Tim Graham.
Hello and welcome to the Newsbusters podcast and our outbreak of post-debate stress disorder. That was something. So last night, my wife wanted to watch the debate side by side with me. You know, usually I would watch it somewhere else where I could yell at the screen. She said, no, I want to watch it with you. And I thought, this will probably be a bad idea. My wife's less political than I am. And, well, I do have a tendency to rant a bit during these kinds of events. But it was funny because we ended up basically coming down in the same position while the debate was going on, which was basically, wow, this is a mess. This is just a, you know, a constant debatus interruptus. The one thing we mainly disagreed on was this bizarre jaunt into Chris Wallace saying, I need Donald Trump to condemn white supremacy. Now, to ask somebody to condemn white supremacy is to imply that somehow they are in league with white supremacists or are a white supremacist. It's not just a question. It is an insult. And we've been around this before. This was what happened after Charlottesville, where the reporters pressed him and pressed him until Donald Trump said, I condemn white supremacists entirely. I condemn the neo-Nazis. And to this day, people on the left pretend he never said those words after Charlottesville. So I think, to me, going into this debate, one of the things that was going to upset me is if you drag out these sorts of anti-controversies, just like I was pleased that it didn't come up that, you know, President Trump, you refused to suggest you would accept the results of the election, which was what Chris Wallace pulled on him in 2016. Again, it's not a question they asked Hillary. They didn't ask Hillary if she was going to accept the results of the election. Why? Because they just presumed she was going to win. So last night, Donald Trump gets asked, basically pressed, demanded to condemn white supremacy. He's like, sure, I'll do it. Give me a group. And Chris Wallace did not ask Joe Biden to condemn Antifa. Why? Well, I suppose the natural media assumption would be, well, why should he have to do that? He's not associated with Antifa. And then they even try to suggest that Joe Biden suggested in the crosstalk that Antifa is not an organization, it's an idea. That's not exactly what the federal government would conclude in investigating the violence that's instigated by these people. But he's allowed to say that. Chris Wallace doesn't have an answer for that. Chris Wallace didn't demand that he condemn anything or anyone. Now, the president made this point. This was one of the things going into the debate that I think we were kind of looking forward to, is the news media never really wants to suggest the Democrats have an extremism problem. The Democrats somehow aren't ideological at all, just like the liberal media. They're not the liberal media. They're merely the mainstream media. And wherever they are is the mainstream. And if their mainstream moves dramatically to the left, well, it's still mainstream. So Donald Trump was making this point to Biden. He was basically saying, you're going to be enthralled to the far left. You're going to be around AOC's finger. You're going to be dominated by the socialists.
We're saying that Biden wanted to allow people to have private insurance still. They can. They do. They will under my proposal.
It's not what you've said, but, and it's not what your party has said.
That is simply
your party
a lie.
Doesn't say it. Your party wants to go socialist medicine.
My party is
and
me.
Socialist
right
healthcare.
Now, I am.
And
the
they're going to dominate
party.
You, Joe. You know that.
This was not a question Chris Wallace was asking. This was something where Trump basically took it and did it himself, and he deserves credit for that. But he shouldn't have to do that himself. And I think the problem we have with the news media is when the president goes on the attack against the extreme left, there's a bunch of the country, maybe Mrs. Graham, who would say, I don't know what they're talking about. Who's Antifa? And if Biden says they're an idea, not an organization, they don't know whether that's true or not because the news media just doesn't focus on it. Even now, after all the violence in Portland, they will still go running around saying, well, the main domestic terror threat's from the right wing, not the left wing, which again, the president was trying to draw this out last night, that this is where the violence mostly was on the far left. Happening in democratic cities like Portland, like Seattle. But, you know, again, our news media, there's just things they don't want to cover. And then people get left out. Like, they don't understand what the president's talking about. They don't understand what conservatives are talking about. You go to Thanksgiving dinner, and when you start talking about Antifa, they all look at you like you're crazy because they haven't heard anything about that. To some degree, this also happened with the Hunter Biden thing, where President Trump has to bring up Hunter Biden because Chris Wallace isn't going to bring up Hunter Biden. And when you start talking about, he said, Hunter Biden accepted $3.5 million from someone associated with Putin, Biden can just say that's not true. Well, there's no context. There's no notion that this is actually a piece of journalism or a committee report because this is something the networks have skipped. They decide it's not news. And so Trump brings it up and they all sound weird, like, I don't know what you're talking about. They've tried very hard when it comes to Hunter Biden, that if you criticize Hunter Biden and his obvious tendency here to enrich himself on his daddy's coattails to the tune of millions of dollars in the Ukraine, in China, while Biden was vice president, that's an unseemly situation. And the so-called accountability media just don't care because Joe Biden's their candidate. The idea that these people are all interested in accountability is something that you should just not accept. One of the things we try to talk about at Newsbusters is you have a media that's all aggression with the Republicans and all nice sugary softness with the Democrats. There was another part of the debate that was interesting where the president was talking about something that the people in the middle or the less interested political people probably didn't understand. And that is where Trump starts complaining that I didn't have a transition. And people are probably saying, well, what? You were elected. You had a transition period where you hired your staff and then you were inaugurated. I don't know what you're talking about.
So when I listened to Joe talking about a transition, there's been no transition from when I won. I won that election. And if you look at crooked Hillary Clinton, if you look at all of the different people, there was no transition because they came after me trying to do a coup. They came after me spying on my campaign. They started from the day I won and even before I won, from the day I came down the escalator with our first lady. They were a disaster. They were a disgrace to our country.
What they don't understand is, and what Trump has to try to explain to them is all of the shenanigans going on in 2016 and 2017 around Trump, trying to connect him in Russia, starting in the summer. You know, this is coming out even as the debate was going on. This notion of what was going on with the FBI, what was going on with the Clinton campaign. The Clinton campaign paying for a dossier of Russian gossip. You know, it's kind of amazing this week. You know, Hugh Hewitt had Brian Stelter on his radio show. And Brian Stelter tried to pretend he had no idea what this, it's a four-year-old dossier. I'm a media reporter. I don't know anything about the dossier. And then, of course, people pull up the video of Brian Stelter talking about the dossier and getting defensive with Kellyanne Conway about how dare she say the dossier isn't verified, which it wasn't. But this is the kind of thing that all the shenanigans going around with the Obama-Biden folks and the FBI to try to ruin Trump's presidency before it started, all the games they played with Michael Flynn, are things that people just don't know much about unless you watch Fox News, unless you're going to the conservative blogosphere, unless you're listening to conservative talk radio. And the mainstream media treats that all like, well, you can't trust that. That's all disinformation. Any information they don't like, they describe as disinformation. And that's why they run around, they go to Facebook and they say, you need to shut this down because we don't like this information. And they will literally say Facebook is a threat to democracy. Why? Because they're letting anti-democratic party speech fly. That's what a democracy is. Somebody needs to tell these people, democracy is we get to denounce you, we get to investigate you, we get to criticize you. That's democracy. And if you can't handle it, maybe you're the one that's not in favor of democracy. I just can't imagine how crazy it is here in the lab, in the Newsbusters newsroom, the news analysis room, on debate nights where we have usually a crew of three. We have Scott Whitlock comes in from the morning. We have Curtis Houck. And we have Nicholas Fondacaro, who is here to discuss with us the crazy night we had. Graduate of SUNY Binghamton. Do you say SUNY?
We usually just go Binghamton University.
Binghamton University, a nice state school like Bemidji State University. Sadly, a fan of the New York Jets.
Yes.
Say no more. So what was it like taking this in last night with the fellas?
We were really blown away by just sort of how raucous it was, how, for the most part, it was just sort of uncontrolled. Chris Wallace, unfortunately, wasn't able to, like, rein in either candidate to any extent. And we got CNN calling it a an S show.
Yes, this morning, actually, you might have missed this, that John Berman said it was Trump that took the dump. I mean, that this is, but again, yeah, their immediate take last night, I for some reason watched the debate on CNN because there's a piece of me that wanted to see if they tried to do real-time fact-checking of Trump. But yeah, right from the get-go, it was all, the debate was terrible, and it's all Trump's fault.
Yeah, I was watching CNN too, and I kept an eye on, like, their chyron and any sort of scroll that would come up. They didn't try anything, which was good, but afterwards you had Daniel Dale come on and do his classic. Biden had some false statements, but he was mostly truthful, and yeah, they only showed fact checks of Trump.
Biden is like the mostly peaceful protester of truth. Well, this is one of those things I don't think people really understand. Daniel Dale is a guy who wrote these anti-Trump bombs for the Toronto Star, mm-hmm, and sort of got on CNN and Brian Stelter's radar, and suddenly his fact checks went from Canada to the United States. But yeah, this is the same tack he took during the conventions. Oh, the Democratic convention was just mostly truth. And of course, like Stelter, he likes to use these colorful phrases. It was a blizzard of lies. It was a fire hose of lies.
Well, he probably should have. Obviously, he wouldn't fact check Trump's comment about Hunter Biden getting dishonorably discharged, because we know that had some sort of had connections with his narcotics problem. So clearly, it wasn't like a mountain of coke of lies.
Yeah. Well, I mean, these are the things they just never want to discuss. And that is, yes, you could say Donald Trump wasn't as uncivil as you might have expected, because he could have said, you know, and then your son who's impregnating strippers, you know, he didn't...
Cheating or
cheating, dating the widow of his brother.
Exactly.
I mean, these sorts of stories that if people actually knew them, they'd at least say, wow, this Biden family's like a Kardashian reality show.
Or the backstory on a house call for cops.
Well, and he's had some interesting incidents with the police as well. Mm-hmm. But I guess you would say that since he's a privileged white male, he survived. But I mean, we've seen stories done on Hunter Biden, like the New York Times did this just utterly embarrassing piece about, you know, now he has a nice abode in Los Angeles where he paints. That's mm-hmm, our news media. So what else was on CNN?
You had Anderson Cooper just like completely losing his noodle and just calling Trump morbidly immoral and equating him to a psychopath when Rick Santorum was saying that Trump feels that he has been wronged for all 4 years of his presidency from the media, which is true. And Anderson Cooper basically says narcissists and psychopaths think the same way as him. So,
yeah, I hadn't seen as much of Rick Santorum in recent months. And then I checked it on Nexus and he's still showing up. But just in the last few days, you can tell he's visible enough because he trended on Twitter the other day because they get so mad at him. Mm-hmm. And so, yes, here's Rick Santorum. He comes on CNN and actually states our point of view, which is Trump feels the media is extremely unfair. And at the center of the unfairness is the network he's sitting in. So Cooper called him obesely immoral.
I'm assuming that just me, like, I hope he's not trying to body shame President Trump, considering that CNN was one of the ones pushing the lie that he had a heart attack or some sort of cardiac issue. But at the same time, it almost feels like they just, like, take, like, a jumble of adjectives and just, like, mix them together and be like, he is this.
CNN Mad Libs edition.
Exactly.
It's just like, and then this morning, our intern Joe Norris was noticing that Paul Begala was suggesting that that the president of the United States was like a poop-throwing chimpanzee. So, these are apparently appropriate descriptions of what the president is. And then Anderson Cooper thinks, well, he has no reason to feel insulted. And again, I'm sure that what Santorum was referring to is just this whole notion we've had for 3 or 4 years that he's completely owned by the Russians with no actual consideration of what kind of Russia policy has Donald Trump had and how does that compare to the Obama Biden policy on Russia, and it would be fun for Trump to upset Yamiche Alcindor all over again like he did a year or two ago, where he said, they took Crimea and Obama just let them, which is what really happened. Now you could say, well, he's not gonna go to global war for the Crimean Peninsula, but obviously to say that last night, Biden said Trump was Putin's puppy, and then they come on afterwards and say, "Well, he was very, he had good tone. He had an even temperament." Huh?
Yeah, you had like the networks coming on and basically, saying dismissing any sort of outburst that he had like that, telling Trump to, like, just shut up, man, and all these things, basically saying, like you had Mary Bruce over on ABC saying, their White House correspondent, or congressional correspondent, just basically saying, it's like, oh, that was, by our new standards in the Trump era, that is very presidential.
Well, this is the funny thing, is, look, you can look at this debate and say, this was a complete mess. This was one person yelling and the other person yelling. But you would also have to acknowledge, yes, Trump's sort of objective here was to get Biden to yell at him. And in that objective, he succeeded. When you're calling the president of the United States a clown and telling him to shut up, generally that's not the way we're supposed to behave around the dinner table. Mm-hmm. I know most of us, our parents would tell us that that's not the way to talk to your sister. So I guess Trump succeeded in that way. The other thing that really killed me was, I think you said this was at 1:30 a.m. I mean, this is the kind of thing that you have to be a crazy newsbuster to be watching CNN for bias at 1:30 a.m. But here we have, somehow, for some reason, Don Lemon compares Joe Biden to a tasty tuna melt.
We've had 4 years or 5 years of someone who's saying, I don't like, he's not a hero because he was captured. Very fine people on both sides. Shithole countries. Paying a porn star.
So unless you're...
His wife is pregnant, but all of these things.
I know. So what does it tell
taking away health care. So what you want to know, you're deciding between a tasty tuna melt and rat poison?
What was that?
Almost no words. The fact that you have, like, Don Lemon just basically coming out for one of the candidates like that and claiming that he routinely claims that, oh, I'm not a Democrat, I'm not for any candidate, but you're comparing one candidate to rat poison.
Yep. Yeah.
Like, there's no way you can say that you're not for a side when you're comparing one person to a thing that will kill you.
Yeah, or maybe you're suggesting that anybody who supports Trump must be, again, a rat or a chimpanzee. But I mean, it is one of those things where he goes on this long rant. And this is CNN. CNN goes on these long rants. I mean, Jake Tapper comes on and he does this whole thing about how, you know, this wasn't a debate. This was a disgrace. And it's all Trump's fault. And you just say, how do you guys define yourself for people as the cable news network? And how can, like, Brian Stelter, when he talks to Hugh Hewitt, gets all upset when he says all the cable news shows are infotainment. And Stelter's like, you take that back. Well, it's like, watch CNN after the debate, and does that sound like a talk show to you or a news show? I think it's obvious.
Yeah, with Brian Stelter, he routinely has like these people on his show that say like the craziest stuff. Like one time he had like a psychiatrist come on, a parapsychiatrist who to psychoanalyze Trump, somebody who they have never seen as a patient,
right,
to claim he has all these mental problems, and one of them ends up claiming that Trump had killed, past tense, more people than Hitler, Mao, and Stalin combined.
I think he was trying to suggest that it would end up that way because of climate change.
Perhaps, but
it's just this one of these things where the whole segment is, let's have two psychologists come on to discuss how crazy is Trump. Is he super crazy or is he merely mildly crazy? And the guy that claimed he was going to kill everybody was trying to suggest we are not seeing him, so it's probably unhelpful to suggest he's crazy, but he is a mass murderer. You're like,
the hoops they try to jump through. Back to your point about Tapper here. He the way he carries himself, just like not just last night, but on his shows in general, when he does like these closing monologues or his opening monologues, he honestly thinks that he's Edward R. Murrow.
Yep.
Like this bastion or this truth teller of civility and morality, when he's very not consistent.
Right. Well, it has that whole phrase of a secular sermon. And, you know, and Stelter will try to say, well, these essays, they call them essays, like they're very literate. Like you could put them in a bound volume and like they're great literature. They're rants and they are... this whole line, this was not a debate, it was a disgrace. It's like, again, I think this is what we could have called the Stelter segment with the two psychologists. That wasn't a debate, because they don't have debates on Stelter's show. They have a long series of journalists ranting about stuff with guests like Carl Bernstein. All he does is rant that Trump's a dangerous psychopath criminal.
Oh, exactly. And you have them sort of talking about like this election like it's like the coming fall of Rome.
Yeah.
Where you had Tapper last night just going off about how Trump knows he's not going to win the election and he's trying to bring the rest of us down with him.
Yeah. Yeah, again.
Do they think Trump is like playing his instruments while Rome is burning, like, and just...
Well, I think there's always the assumption that you could hear it again in Don Lemon's Tasty Tuna lecture, is that they just think that this country is going down the tubes with Trump, and that either we get rid of Trump, like they tried to get rid of him with impeachment, either you impeach him, either you defeat him at the ballot box, or else democracy is over. And this is a problem we've seen with liberals and Democrats over the years, it's become especially toxic under Trump, this whole idea that unless the Democrats win, we don't have a democracy.
It sort of shows you how little faith that they have in our system of government, that it can be resilient enough to survive one man.
Yeah, well, and again, if Donald Trump had become president and been the sort of threat to our democracy that they always pretended he was, I mean, this is where we could play the Trump debate tactic. Name one journalist he's put in jail. You know, name one political opponent who's been arrested for exercising their speech. You know, there's no precedent here to actually fit this whole idea that Stelter and company always sell, that Trump is somehow a budding authoritarian.
Or even tried to put in jail. You had Obama try to put James Rosen and James Risen in jail for reporting on stuff about him. And Trump has, like, the closest thing that you could even argue was Trump, like, sort of singling out CNN reporters to take away their press passes.
Right.
But even that, it's based on the fact that they turn... The people's business, the press briefings, into circuses where they're the carnival barkers.
Well, that's where it's really funny again. Jake Tapper's never going to say Jim Acosta created a disgrace instead of a debate. That's what CNN does bring. That's what Ryan Lizza does bring. That's what Olivia Nuzzi does bring. That's what Brian Karam does bring. They come in there and they make a farce and a festival out of the press briefing. You're never going to see them say that somehow democracy is over because these so-called reporters with their so-called accountability corps, you know, are just coming unglued in front of our eyes.
These are the same people that elected John Carl of ABC to be the president of the White House Correspondents Association, and then he goes on to write an anti-Trump book.
Yeah, well, this is where people, I think, understand or need to understand that when Donald Trump or Kayleigh McEnany comes out in the James Brady briefing room to brief the press, they are staring at, well, right now they're staring at what, 16 people because they're all socially distanced. But let's imagine pre-COVID, they're standing there in front of 50 mm-hmm. people. Some are seated, some are standing on the aisles because there's overflow. You've got 50 people there, and about 48 of them voted for the Democrat. 48 of them voted for Hillary Clinton. You know, the person from OAN, you know, maybe the person from Fox, didn't vote for Hillary. Everybody else did. And so, yes, let's imagine we get President Biden next time. What you're going to get is he's going to walk into the briefing room. And again, 48 out of the 50 people have voted for Biden. So you're going to get a much different feel. There's nothing dangerous for Biden in that atmosphere. Or even, you know, you could say that John Carl asked Obama some pretty fierce questions. Mm-hmm. And then what would happen? Somehow those exchanges never made the ABC News. So, I mean, now when they yell at the president, they make sure that those exchanges go right into the newscast. You see that?
Oh, yes, particularly with, like, John Carl. They'll send his confrontations with the president will be, like, sort of the centerpiece of their reports where they'll just be like, today we pressed them on this, and then here's a minute of the argument.
Right. I mean, CBS does this with Paula Reed all the time.
Oh, yeah.
Here's me chewing out Trump. This is the sort of thing where, again, we're going to see the opposite. If Biden is elected, what we're going to see then is going back to little Mary, you know, Mary Had a Little Lamb type media, where they're going to ask him, you know, like Jeff Zeleny, what enchants you about your first 100 days? And that's what they're too shameless to not acknowledge the difference between the way they cover Democrats and Republicans.
I'm actually really looking forward to how many of the members of the press end up joining the Biden administration in some sort of spokesperson role, either for his White House or any of the other cabinet positions and departments.
Well, and we've been looking at this for a very long time. You know, Brent Baker back at the beginning we had a feature in our Media Watch newsletter back then called The Revolving Door. And we were constantly showing people the revolving door between Democrats and the media, between the media and the Democrats, going back and forth. And you know, now they've tried to make a big deal out of how there's been this rotating door between Fox and the Trump White House, and there's been some of that. You know, it was intriguing that Bill Shine, who was running Fox News, then became head of the White House communication shop. That's a good illustration of the principle. But anybody who's really, we'd like to think here at Newsbusters, that anybody who's following the media should understand the dramatic difference in the way they cover the two parties. So we encourage you to come by and look at Newsbusters. We have a new study. Rich Noyce has a new study. Maybe we'll have him on soon. But the reality is that Biden's getting incredibly positive press right now on the evening news networks that Mr. Fondacaro is watching every night. 54% positive, while Trump's still getting 93% negative. You're going to want to check that out. Come by, Newsbusters, and thanks for listening.